You are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I'm your host, Erin O'Sullivan. Today, we are going to be talking to Morgan Lance, the United States Director of Animals Asia. Founded by Jill Robinson in 1998, Animals Asia is devoted to the welfare of wild and urban animals in Asia. It's an amazing organization. It is renowned worldwide for its work. We actually had Jill Robinson on the show back in 2008, and I encourage everyone to check out that show. Jill is a real inspiration and had some amazing stories to tell, including about Animals Asia's work doing emergency rescue after the huge 2008 earthquake hit China's Sichuan province. But part of the reason we've asked them to come back on the show at this specific point in time is that their Vietnamese bear sanctuary is under threat of eviction by the Vietnamese government. The story has gotten a ton of press lately, including in the Washington Post and USA Today, so it seems like they might actually be getting enough momentum going to get this eviction stopped. So we at Animal Voices obviously want to do our part to get the word out. In addition to learning more about the impending eviction and the efforts to stop it, we are also going to take the opportunity to catch up with Animals Asia more generally and hear about what they've been up to in the 4 years since we spoke to them last. But before we get started, we've got some news for you. This article came off the Sun News Network on November 3rd, 2012. The headline is, Canada Honors Contributions of Animals in War. A monument to honor animals who served alongside their human comrades in war was unveiled in Ottawa on Saturday. Quote, as a tribute to the efforts of animals who served during crucial battles, we honor their unwavering loyalty, dedicated service, and strong companionship during difficult times, unquote. Steve Blaney, Minister of Veterans Affairs, said in a statement. Quote, with the unveiling of this dedication, Canadians now have a place to honor animals who've served in war alongside our veterans, Ottawa Orleans MP Royal Gallopo told The Gathering. Quote, animals have always been part of our lives and of our culture and should be recognized for their contributions to Canada's war efforts, unquote. A variety of animals were used during war. Mules carried supplies and artillery, horses hauled field guns, carrier pigeons delivered messages to specific destinations, and dogs worked as messengers, medical assistants, mine detectors, and in search and rescue. Dogs are still employed by the Canadian Armed Forces. I read this article for a couple of reasons. First, since we are not long past Remembrance Day, I just wanted to raise awareness about the use of animals in war. According to the United Kingdom's Animals in War Memorial Fund website, for example, 8 million horses died in World War I alone. You can read more about animals in war in the Canadian context at the website of the Animals in War Dedication Project at aiwdedication.ca. Laureen Harper, that's Stephen Harper's wife, is an honorary patron of the project, by the way. The second reason I read the article is because I want to ask our listeners a question. So how do you feel about this gesture? Are you happy that the Canadian government and citizenry have recognized what is owed to animals who have helped us secure our country's peace and prosperity? Or do you consider this memorial an empty or even an offensive gesture, given that animals had no choice but to serve and die in war and that they tended to be treated as expendable when their service was over? So, should this group be commended for the memorial or told to stick it in its collective bottom? Share your opinion on our Facebook page. I have decided to make my own little gesture in the form of today's first musical selection. I'm going to play Bryan Adams' Remembrance Day. I don't know if he had animals in mind when he wrote it, but since our man Bryan is a vegan, I'm going to assume that he did. Well, I think he's a vegan. My research into the matter consisted of typing Vegan Canada Singer into Google and seeing Bryan Adams' name pop up in articles from around 2008, which I then proceeded not to read. But I'm pretty sure he is, or at least he was, so we'll give him credit. One more thing, I also feel like maybe I should apologize for the classic rock to my punk-oriented Animal Voices colleagues and alumni. But remember, tolerance, my friends, and diversity, strength, right? So here is Remembrance Day by Bryan Adams. And now I would like to welcome Morgan Lance to the show. Morgan is the United States Director of Animals Asia. Morgan is going to be talking to us about what Animals Asia has been doing over the last 4 years since we last talked to them, and also is going to be telling us about what's been going on with the eviction notice that their Vietnamese bear sanctuary has been served by the government of Vietnam. So welcome, Morgan.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Now, just to get the interview started, can you share with our audience just some basic information about Animals Asia?
Sure, absolutely. Animals Asia is a Hong Kong-based nonprofit, and it was founded in 1998 by Jill Robinson. In 1993, Jill was working for the International Fund for Animal Welfare, based out of Hong Kong, and she had a chance to visit a bear farm in China. And up until that point, bear farms were pretty much unknown by Westerners, but Jill's visit there really changed things. While on a tour of a bear farm, she kind of snuck off from the tour group and found a room that had just cages and cages, rows and rows of bears that were being milked for their bile, and the bile was to be used in traditional Chinese medicine. And the bears were in absolutely terrible condition. And what she saw in that room really changed her life, changed the entire course of her life, and caused her to dedicate her life to ending bear bile farming and to starting Animals Asia to help with that work. And in 2000, she did something that was just absolutely unbelievable. She signed an agreement with the Chinese government to open a rescue center for bears that have been rescued from bile farms within China. And part of that agreement also was to begin looking at ways to end the bear bile farming industry within China. And then just a few years later, in 2005, Jill and Animals Asia opened a second bear rescue center in Vietnam. And to date, between the two sanctuaries, we've rescued almost 400 bears.
Now, can you give us a bit more information on the bear bile industry? What happens to these bears, and what is bear bile used for?
Well, bear bile is a type of medicine that's been used in traditional Chinese medicine for almost 3,000 years and was actually quite an important part of Chinese medicine for quite a long time, but now is so easily replaced by herbs and synthetics, it really isn't needed as a medication in traditional medicine any longer. It's used primarily at this point in hospitals as an injectable medication. It's used for liver problems and eye problems, illnesses of that nature. But even more so, it's sold as a gift. It's sold as a health tonic. It's sold in its raw form. And it's a gift product that's very prestigious throughout much of Asia and highly sought after both in China and Korea for that reason. The problem with bear bile, of course, is the way it's procured. Bears are usually caught in the wild, and the bears that are used most often for this industry are the Asiatic black bear, which are also known as moon bears because they have a beautiful sort of lemony crescent of fur on their chest that looks like the shape of a moon. So moon bears are generally caught in the wild, put into cages, which are called crush cages, on farms in China, and they will have their bile drained from their gallbladders through what's called the free drip method, which is basically an open hole that goes right through the abdominal wall into the gallbladder and allows the bile to just drip freely, where it's collected and then processed into a powder or a tonic that's sold for people to take.
And is bear bile actually an effective medication? Does it actually do what people think it does?
It actually does. It contains something called ursodeoxycholic acid, and that acid has a property that can actually regenerate cells. And so here in the United States, it's actually been looked at in the synthetic form as a possible cure for things like Parkinson's disease. But it's not used in that way in traditional medicine. It's used for much simpler illnesses, hemorrhoids, liver problems, fevers, things that could be so easily treated by other mainstream pharmaceutical products or herbs.
And is it specifically a bear bile thing, or is it a bile more generally thing?
It's specifically bear bile that has this high concentration of UDCA. So that is why the bears have been targeted. And it's quite unbelievable to imagine that somehow 3,000 years ago, some traditional Chinese medicine doctor figured that out. But it's true that the UDCA in bear bile is quite concentrated, and that's why it's so prized.
And who is farming these bears? Is it pharmaceutical companies or independent farmers?
It's a combination. There are several large companies within China that are farming bears on a big scale and selling their product directly to pharmaceutical companies. And then there are also the smaller farms, sort of the mom and pop farms with just a handful of bears each, that sell to a variety of different manufacturers who then, you know, will either turn it into a medicine product or a gift product.
And would you call the industry regulated, either in China and Vietnam, or, for example, is it legal to buy bear bile products in Canada and the United States?
In China, the production of bear bile and the sale of bear bile is completely legal, and it is sort of ordained by the government within China. Bear bile farms are licensed by the Chinese government, and so it's very much a tolerated practice. In Vietnam, where we also work, bear bile farming is illegal, but continues as a black market activity. Here in the United States and in Canada, it's illegal to buy or possess bear bile coming from Asia. But in some states within the U.S. at least, there are no laws against either buying or transporting bear bile or bear gallbladders from domestic bears. So someone in certain states can go out and hunt a black bear and sell their gallbladder for traditional medicine. And of course, when those gallbladders are sold, there's no guarantee that it's actually coming from a domestic bear. Sometimes we actually do know that bear bile from and bear gallbladders from Asia and from endangered bears like the Asiatic black bear are finding their way into the markets here in the United States. In fact, customs agents at several U.S. ports do seize bear bile on a very, very frequent basis coming in from Asia. And I should say that the Federal Lacey Act in the United States prohibits the sale of any endangered species product or part, and the Asiatic black bear or moon bear is a CITES Appendix 1 endangered species. So it's a felony to possess or sell any product from an Asiatic black bear in the U.S.
And that actually leads into one of the next questions I wanted to ask you, which is, why does Canada and some of the United States prohibit bear bile? Is it an animal welfare issue, or it actually sounds like from what you're saying that it's a conservation issue, that it's because they're endangered?
It's a conservation issue, really, more than anything else.
So tell us about Animals Asia's bear sanctuaries.
Sure, we have two of them, one in China and one in Vietnam. The China Bear Rescue Center is in Chengdu in Sichuan Province. And it's a 32-acre sanctuary that houses about 300 bears, a little over 300 bears. And it's just a beautiful place, a place of incredible peace and healing. And we have fantastic vet teams there that do wonderful rehab work with the bears that are coming off of bear farms and also compile scientific evidence about the harmful effects of bear bile farming on the bears and the possible effects of taking bile by humans, as the bile is often contaminated with blood and pus and all kinds of horrible things because it's coming out of bears that are quite sick most of the time. In Vietnam, we have a sanctuary in the Tam Dao National Park. It's a 29-acre sanctuary, and it's a bit newer than our China Sanctuary. It's still under development. We've only built half of what we had planned to build up until this point, and we house 104 bears there at this moment.
Do the sanctuaries welcome visitors?
We do. At both sanctuaries, there are open days when people can come on tours and see the sanctuaries. And we also have special programs for local schools and local people to come see the bears. But tourists from outside of China and Vietnam can definitely contact us and set up a time to come visit.
And speaking of the locals, how do they feel about these sanctuaries?
They really like them, partly because we have brought new jobs into the areas and have allowed them to have basically these great opportunities to work with the bears. We employ over 70 local staff members in Vietnam and over 100 in China, and they are taking care of the bears. They're doing horticultural work for us. They are helping to, you know, procure the food for the bears, and so many of them have just really fallen in love with the bears in a way that we're just so pleased to see.
And was that reaction to the bears expected? I'm trying to think of how things would look through different cultural lenses. And for example, if somebody in North America decided to set up a giant sanctuary for laboratory mice, I might be all for it, but I suspect that a lot of people in this country would think that you were crazy. So with respect to the bear sanctuaries, was it the case that the bears were already revered by the locals, so everybody was already expecting to have these great experiences with them, or were the feelings that developed for the bears more of a surprise?
Absolutely, the latter. When our China sanctuary first opened, our Chinese staff, were there because it was a good job, and some of them would even say that they felt a little bit embarrassed to be working at the sanctuary because working with animals wasn't considered a very prized career by any means. But as time has gone on, their attitudes have changed so dramatically. And I think partly that's because the attitude throughout China towards animals and animal welfare has changed quite dramatically over the last 10 years. And because the people that work at our sanctuaries in both countries are seeing the incredible support that the projects receive from the West as well. So they've become quite proud. And in fact, when the earthquake hit Sichuan province, some of our staff there did not want to leave the bears. They, even though they had, homes and families to get to and check on, they were so concerned about the bears that they wanted to stay and care for the bears. And, of course, we didn't let them, but that sentiment was there that they had really fallen in love, with these animals.
So tell us about the eviction.
Yes, the eviction. Our Vietnam sanctuary, which has been in operation since 2005 and was formed in partnership with a branch of the Vietnamese government, the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Development, and was also given the official seal of approval by the Prime Minister of Vietnam in 2008, is currently under threat of eviction. And the reason is that the sanctuary is located in the Tam Đào National Park. And the park director, Mr. Tien, has launched a very aggressive campaign to remove us from that location. He initially had tried to stop us from building more bear houses and enclosures in our sanctuary, bear houses and enclosures that are desperately needed if we're going to be able to get more bears off of farms in Vietnam. I should say that right now we estimate that about 2,400 bears are on bio farms in Vietnam. And again, we only have 104 bears at our sanctuary, so there's plenty more work to be done. But we're at maximum capacity at the moment. We need to build more and had been given the approval to build more by the local government partners. But Mr. Tien, the park director, would like to have us removed from the land, we believe, because a company that his daughter has an investment in is interested in building hotels and a tourist park on the property. And what has happened is that he has lobbied the Ministry of Defense to declare the park land that we are situated on an area of national defense significance. So this, of course, has caused us a problem and has resulted in the military asking us to officially leave, basically giving us an eviction notice. The notice has now gone to the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister will make the ultimate decision as to whether we must leave or not. Some interesting things that have come up are that after the eviction notice was put through, just right after that, actually, Park Director Mr. Tien put through his own submission of an application for development of a wildlife park in the same area where our sanctuary is currently located, the same area that had just been declared, of national defense significance. So again, we really don't think that this declaration of national defense significance is the reason we're being asked to leave. We believe that the use of the land for tourist development by Mr. Tien's daughter's company is the real reason.
I noticed there's been a lot of media coverage in the wake of this eviction notice. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, it's been really wonderful. We've been working both within Vietnam and without to contact media far and wide and get them to run this story and help bring attention to the issue. And just in the last few weeks here in the West, we've had the Vancouver Sun, the Washington Post, the New York Times blog, USA Today, all cover the story. CNN International has covered it. But probably more importantly, we're seeing the story start to really take hold in Vietnam itself, with Vietnamese papers and social media sites picking the story up and running with it. And in fact, just recently, the official Vietnamese government news source put out a story about this issue, which was quite exciting for us to see. Along with the media attention, we've received lots of help from politicians, from government officials around the world, several embassies in Hanoi, the American embassy, the Italian embassy, the British embassy, Australian embassies. They've all written letters in our behalf to the Prime Minister.
How about the Canadian embassy?
not the Canadian embassy yet, as far as I know, but hopefully that will happen. And we've also had the European ministers and many, many other NGOs from around the world become involved in this issue, which is just fantastic. And what we're asking people to do around the world is to help also by writing a letter or sending an email to the Prime Minister of Vietnam, asking him to uphold the original agreement to allow us to build our sanctuary and maintain our sanctuary in Tam Dao. And there's information for that on our website at animalsasia.org/stop-the-eviction.
I've actually been to the Animals Asia website, and I did do the action items that were requested and suggested, such as writing to the Vietnamese authorities. However, I hadn't really thought much about the social networking aspect of things apart from, say, sharing information on my Facebook page. Are there any other avenues in the sort of social media universe that we could be directing our efforts towards?
Well, actually, Facebook is the best place right now. In addition to the various petition websites, we have a petition on our website. There is a petition on change.org. There's also going to be one, hopefully, on a few other major petition sites, and that's a great place to do this. In terms of social media in Vietnam, if you write in Vietnamese and can kind of ferret out some of the Vietnamese social media sites, that's a great option. But we do have a full PR team in Vietnam working on this and sort of harnessing the energy of people throughout Vietnam that really love the Bears, love this project, and want to make sure that it continues.
So now, of course, I have to ask the difficult question that must be on everybody's mind, which is, do you really think that you have a chance to win this thing? Do you think that there's a chance that the eviction notice will be retracted?
We think we're going to win. We really do. Yeah, we actually really do. It's such an obvious case of one person basically using undue influence over one government agency to create a real problem for a project that's already been ordained by the Prime Minister and has had always had government support. And we think that the Prime Minister will understand this and will know that not protecting the agreement with Animals Asia will also send a message to investors and nonprofits around the world that Vietnam might be not the right place to do work, not be the right place to do business. So we think that it would be wise for the Prime Minister to uphold the agreement that was originally made with us.
So Morgan, we have to pause for a couple of minutes for a station identification. But first, I'm going to play a song in honor of our friends at Animals Asia who are facing eviction. This is Eviction Notice by the Riverboat Gamblers. Welcome back to Animal Voices. We are talking with Morgan Lance, the United States Director of Animals Asia. Morgan was just telling us about the eviction notice that Animals Asia has been served by the Vietnamese government to vacate their Vietnamese bear sanctuary. Morgan was just telling us that they're actually very, very optimistic that the campaign to stop the eviction will be successful and that the eviction notice will be retracted. However, I do have to ask, in the event, the horrible event, that the eviction notice stands, what does that mean for Animals Asia and what does that mean for the bears? For example, when are you going to be expected to be out?
Right. It's a good question. And we don't have a timeline yet from any of the government agencies as to when we would be expected to move if the eviction notice was upheld. We do know that it would mean a very, very difficult situation for the bears and for the staff at our sanctuary. The bears have been rescued from biofarms. They've spent years, many of them, many, many years, on farms in tiny little cages where they were just really traumatized, both medically and emotionally. And the idea of having to move them, which would include putting them back into transport cages for quite some time while we establish a new rescue center somewhere, would just be traumatic. It would be absolutely horrible and could set them back years in terms of their emotional and physical development. We know that it would probably take about 2 years to establish a new center with bear houses and outdoor enclosures for these bears. So again, that would be up to 2 years in cages, transport cages, which would be good size cages, but still cages nonetheless. And it's just not okay for bears that have already gone through what they've gone through. Luckily, there are several provinces within Vietnam that have already said they would welcome us to their areas because they can see what a great project this is. But it would take time to raise the funds to build a new sanctuary and of course, time to actually design and build it. We also are very concerned about the 77 local Vietnamese staff that work for us. The economy in the Tam Đảo area is quite depressed. There aren't a lot of jobs. These people rely on their work at the sanctuary to take care of their families, to feed their children. And without those jobs, we don't know what they'll do. And so we're quite concerned about them as well.
You indicated that you'd be willing to move to one of the other provinces in Vietnam because other provinces have extended a welcome to the bear sanctuary. But I have to ask, are you not at all worried that the same sort of thing is going to happen again?
We wouldn't, because this is a very clear case of one person acting in a way that contravenes the law, basically. This is one person's campaign against us. And it's not something that's rampant in Vietnam. It's not the government. It's Mr. Tien, the park director, that is causing this problem.
Now, can you tell us a little more about the bears? I've seen the pictures on Animals Asia's websites where the bears are in cages and you get to read about the terrible things that happen to them and the terrible traumas that they endure. But what are the bears like when they are happy, when they're just being bears?
They're like toddlers. That's really the only way to put it. I was just at the Vietnam Bear Rescue Center 2 weeks ago and spent several hours happily watching the bears play. And they're like toddlers. They wrestle, which is amazing because in the wild they would be quite solitary. But due to space issues, we have to house them in groups. And they happily live together and chase each other and climb up play structures and love to search for food in their enclosures. And at night, they happily go into their dens and sleep in hanging baskets and really remind me of young children more than anything else. They're quite sweet to watch.
So how do you keep them entertained?
It's a lot of work. And luckily, we have fabulous supporters around the world that help fund the enrichment at our sanctuaries, which includes several rotations of food enrichment in their enclosures every day, where our staff go in and, you know, bury fruits and vegetables throughout the enclosure. We also have incredible climbing structures built by our staff and some fabulous structures donated to us by various groups that make equipment for zoos and such. We have wonderful swimming areas for them, little ponds and pools, and they also spend quite a lot of time sleeping. Afternoon is nap time at the bear sanctuaries, so they're really quite happy there.
And are the bears friendly with humans, or do you pretty much have to keep your distance from them?
We keep our distance from them because we want them to be bears, and they're not pets. They're wild animals, and so we don't interact with them other than when medically necessary. We do have a few bears that have been trained to come up to the cage bars within their enclosures when they need an injection or a blood test or something like that, or to have their hearts listened to with a stethoscope. But other than that, we really don't interact with them except to give them medications. Most of the time, they're, you know, sort of blissfully unaware of all the people walking around and taking care of them.
So how much does it cost to run one of these sanctuaries?
Well, the annual budget for Animals Asia, for all of our programs, is $9 million. And a good portion of that goes to running the sanctuaries, over $1 million a year for each of the sanctuaries.
Now, obviously, these sanctuaries have incredible benefits for the individual bears that are lucky enough to get to live there. But tell us about Animals Asia's broader agenda with respect to these sanctuaries and how the sanctuaries have benefits beyond what they do for the individual bears.
Absolutely. And I should say that the sanctuaries are just a small part of our campaign to end bear farming. In addition to the sanctuaries, we also work on reducing demand by working with the traditional medicine community, going to conferences, speaking to doctors about all the alternatives to bear bile. We work on monitoring the bear bile trade, both with government authorities and different conservation groups. We have public awareness campaigns throughout China and Vietnam, media campaigns and educational campaigns, and we also do government lobbying and work with government officials to try to change policy. So the bear sanctuaries are really just a very small part of what we're doing to end bear farming, and we know that bear sanctuaries are not the answer to ending bear farming. However, they're the answer for the bears that have been rescued, and those bears become ambassadors for the species. They also become a way for us to gain really vital information about bear bile farming. For instance, when bears in China are rescued from bile farms, they have so much damage that's been done to their gallbladders through the bile extraction process that one of the first things we have to do is surgically remove their gallbladders. When those gallbladders are removed, they're tested. We can look at what is happening pathologically to the gallbladder during the bile extraction process. And from that, we can extract some information about what's happening to the bile and that bile that's being sold to humans and what's in it. And so that informs our campaigns for public awareness when we talk to people about the idea of not taking bear bile because it's not clean, because it can actually make humans sick, and the fact that synthetics or herbs are cleaner. So the sanctuary itself serves the needs of the bears that are in it, but it's also a place to gain scientific information, and it's also a place of education, a place to allow these bears to become ambassadors to the thousands of school children that come through every year on class field trips to see the bears, to the government officials that come and see the bears, and to farmers, quite frankly, who come and see the bears sometimes after closing down their farms. It's amazing that some of the farmers who, for many years, farmed their bears for bile and thought of them simply as machines without any kind of, you know, emotion or feeling, then come to the bear sanctuaries and see these incredible creatures playing and happy and obviously enjoying life and realize that they weren't machines.
And have you actually gotten to witness that yourself? Because I think that would be an amazing thing to see.
I haven't had the pleasure of seeing it, but our founder, Jill Robinson, has seen it many, many times, and you know, she says it's quite extraordinary.
So now I have a little bit of a personal question to ask you. I ask this question a lot to people that work on the ground in campaigns to help animals. And that is, do you find this work really, really difficult to handle? I know a lot of people think that the sort of job that you do is a dream job, getting to help animals, getting to help bring animals to sanctuary. But you also have to deal on a daily basis with people that engage in these terrible practices and that support these terrible practices, and you have to engage with them in a positive and supportive and, I guess, non-judgmental way. And do you find that incredibly draining or difficult?
I think that for our staff in China, for Jill and our teams in China and in Vietnam, it's just second nature. They know that the only way that we will ever win this fight is through calm-mindedness and kindness and education and understanding that there's no country in the world that would want people from outside of their country coming in and telling them what to do. And Jill's been keenly aware of that from the start. And so one of the things she did right away was to make sure that the team surrounding her and leading this campaign, both in China and Vietnam, was made up of people from China and Vietnam, so that there was this understanding of it's not an us against them thing. It's an all of us for the animals thing. And I think there have been moments for sure that have been challenging for Jill and the team. But overall, she's received so much support from within both China and Vietnam, from just the average citizen all the way up to superstar celebrities and politicians and business people, that she feels at the end of the day, each and every day, pretty good.
So I'm going to ask you to take us back a little ways, back to when Animals Asia was being founded. So here we have Jill Robinson. She's working for IFA. That's the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And fast forward a few years, and we have agreements with the Chinese and Vietnamese governments. We have enormous, very well-funded bear sanctuaries. How did she pull this off? It just seems like an incredible feat.
Well, she's a very, very, very passionate person. And when she learned about bear farming during a visit to a bear bile farm in China, she just knew that this was something that she had to work on. She actually tells a story about that very first visit when she was in the room full of cages of bears being farmed for their bile. And she felt something brush her shoulder. And when she turned around, she noticed that it was the paw of a bear, a female bear, who was lying on her side and sticking her paw through the cage bars. And Jill turned and put her hand on the bear's paw. And she says now that she would never do that because she knows that bears are incredibly strong and those claws are incredibly sharp. And it's quite a dangerous thing to do, but she didn't know at the time. And so she reached out and took the bear's paw, and the bear started very gently squeezing her hand. And she said at that moment a message passed between the two of them, and it was a message that she couldn't ignore. She knew that at that point, if she walked away, she would never forgive herself for not doing something. So she decided at that moment, you know, she was the one who was going to have to do something, and went back to Hong Kong, where she was working for IFA, and started talking to everyone she knew about the issue, and little by little started getting some support, started getting some good guidance on how to work with the government in China, began to get some financial support, and then, you know, founded Animals Asia in 1988, and in 2000 signed that incredible agreement with the Chinese government to open the China Bear Rescue Center in Chengdu. It was just an amazing amount of passion and tenacity on her part that got this done. And diplomacy. She always was very diplomatic in the way she approached the situation and continues to be today.
Yeah, and one of the things I heard that actually impressed me was that Animals Asia actually compensated some of the bear farmers.
We do. In China, we always compensate the farmers for the bears, and we don't do a piecemeal closure of a farm. We won't go in and rescue just a handful of bears. We require that the entire farm be closed down, and we will then pay the farmer to be able to start in a new industry, both because it's the right thing to do. In many cases, these farms, at least in the beginning when we were dealing more with the small family farms, these farms were really, you know, the bread and butter for a family. So we didn't want to, you know, just take away the livelihood of a family without allowing them some other means for starting over, because we knew if we did that, they would just probably continue to bear farm on the black market illegally. I should let you know that when we close a farm, it's not what some people expect. We don't kind of run in there and just grab all the bears on our own. We work in concert with the local government to close a farm, which sounds a little strange because I've already mentioned that bear biofarming is completely legal in China, but there are regulations that the farms must follow. And generally, when we can prove that a bear farm is not following regulations, the government will help us to close that farm down. In Vietnam, it's slightly different because the bear farms are illegal, and so there we do not pay any compensation because it's an illegal industry and we don't want to create any incentive by putting money into that situation.
So once again, how many bears did you say were still on biofarms in China and Vietnam?
The estimates are about 10,000 in China and 2,400 in Vietnam. Most of those are Asiatic black bears or moon bears, but there are also sun bears and Tibetan brown bears on some of the farms as well.
So with respect to rescuing additional bears, is the bottleneck funding or a lack of space in the existing sanctuaries? Or is it the case that you just don't have farmers who are willing to give up their bear farms yet?
Right. In China, we don't have the farmers willing to give up their farms yet because it's still a government-endorsed trade. So there's really no reason for them to want to close their farms unless they sort of have their own, you know, aha moment where they realize that bear farming isn't a great thing to do, which we've had that happen. But for the most part, as long as the government allows the trade to go on legally and farmers are continuing to make money, there's very little incentive for them to turn over their bears to us. In Vietnam, it's slightly different. Bear farming is illegal there, and we have had bear farmers voluntarily offer us their bears. The problem there is more a matter of space, and quite frankly, the problems that we're having right now with Mr. Tien in the Tam Dao National Park really exacerbate this issue, because we were trying to build additional housing to bring in more bears. And so the government, obviously, in Vietnam is not going to be able to work with us to remove bears from farms if we don't have some place to put them. So that is more of the bottleneck in that country, the space issue.
So I mentioned earlier that we had Jill Robinson on the show talking about Animals Asia about 4 years ago in 2008. So tell us what Animals Asia has been doing since then. When we talked to Jill last time, it was actually right after the massive earthquake had hit the Sichuan province in China, and Jill was telling us about the emergency rescue work that Animals Asia was involved in.
Right, yes. The earthquake had a huge impact on the Sichuan area. And fortunately, our sanctuary was okay. We sustained a little bit of damage to some of our buildings, but fortunately, all of our staff and bears were just fine. In the meantime, we continued working on government lobbying and educational campaigns throughout China and have had some incredible successes. Just recently this year, over 1,000 Chinese doctors signed on to a pledge to no longer use bear bile. And we had an out an unprecedented outcry against bear bile farming earlier this year when a large bear bile producer applied to go public on the Chinese stock exchange. People throughout China were just outraged by this, and we saw thousands of media reports on the issue and an actual survey of Chinese citizens asking them their feelings about bear bile farming showed that 87% of the Chinese population were in opposition to this industry, which was just fabulous.
Wow, that's staggering.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. There was also an incredible movie brought out at the beginning of the year by a Chinese filmmaker by the name of Elsa Zhang, and the movie's called Moon Bear. It took 2 years to film, and it involved quite a lot of quite dangerous undercover work on bear farms. And that film has won top awards at the Chinese Animals and Nature Film Week and also awards from the Jet Li Foundation. But even more important, within the first 24 hours of that film being released online in China, it received 600,000 views from Chinese citizens, which is just amazing. So this is something that's very, very much a topic of discussion in China. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody within China who hasn't, at this point, been educated about bear bile farming and has an opinion on it. And that includes celebrities. We've had incredible celebrity support over the last few years, both from celebrities within China, like Karen Mok. She's known as the Madonna of China or Madonna of Asia. She's an incredibly popular singer. And the actress Sun Li, also incredibly popular, has come on board to support us. And then Western celebrities like Yao Ming, the basketball player from the U.S., who recently visited our sanctuary, or Ricky Gervais and Stephen Fry, who have lent their support recently to our Stop the Eviction campaign. Just amazing support coming in from all over the celebrity world and from the general public throughout China. And then in Vietnam, we've had some great rescues over the last few years, and just most recently, a rescue of two young cubs that were brought to us by local authorities after they were caught from smugglers who were trying to bring them into Vietnam to be sold to a bear farm. And I had the pleasure of visiting them just a couple of weeks ago in Vietnam and seeing these two cubs now playing and acting like happy, healthy bears at the sanctuary, and that was just wonderful to see. So the End Bear Bile Farming campaign is just going from strength to strength, both in China and Vietnam.
And is that movie that you were referring to available with English subtitles?
It is. In fact, just last week we received an edition of it with English subtitles. So that is something that is available through our office. And I can give you the website and the email address if you'd like that for people to contact us.
Sure. We're actually going to ask you to share your contact information and let people know how they can get in contact with you and learn more about Animals Asia right at the end of the show. But we actually have a few more minutes. So in the meantime, if you can just bear with me, no pun intended, see what I did there. So if you'll just bear with me, Animals Asia actually does work for animals other than bears.
We do. Absolutely. We have three flagship programs in bear bile farming, cat and dog welfare, and zoos and safari parks. Our cat and dog welfare looks at the market in cat and dog meat throughout China and looks at ways to elevate the status of cats and dogs throughout that country to help people see them as friends rather than food. And our zoos and safari parks project works with captive animals throughout China, looking at ways to improve conditions for captive animals, also looking at vet capacity training so that veterinarians have a better understanding of how to work with captive animals as well as domestic animals throughout China. So they're two very, very exciting and compelling campaigns. I wish we had time to talk about them as well because they're an important part of our work in addition to the bear bile farming campaign.
So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate with you and ask why the emphasis on dogs and cats specifically, because arguably, if people do stop eating dogs and cats, they're just going to shift consumption to other animals.
Sure. That's a very good question, a very fair question, and one that we're asked quite often. Cat and dog meat in China is seen as a delicacy. So it's not a case of a meat that's used by the average citizen. It's kind of a specialty meat and used at special times of the year for certain reasons. And so we see that it's a little bit different in that in that respect, in terms of how people in China see it as opposed to meat from other animals. Now, we don't see it any differently. Our feeling is that, you know, we'd love for no animals to be harmed for human consumption. But the dog and cat issue, we believe, is a way to start the conversation in China about animal welfare overall, because a huge portion of the Chinese population do have dogs or cats as animals, as pets in their homes already. And so we think that by starting with them, by elevating dogs and cats to a status above meat animal status in China, we're starting that conversation that can, you know, eventually lead to a change in thinking about all animals in that country.
So we are coming up to the end of the interview, but for the last couple of minutes, I just wanted to turn it over to you, Morgan, so you can share with our audience any additional information you would like to share, also your contact information, how people can learn more, and what people can do, anything else that you wanted to say. So take it away.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that opportunity. Well, at the moment, we really appreciate all the support that we've been getting from Canada and from the U.S. for our campaign to stop the eviction of our Vietnam Bear Rescue Center. And if anyone would like to learn more about that and find out how they can help by sending a short letter or email that we've already drafted for them, they can just visit us at www.animalsasia.org/stop-the-eviction. For people that like to learn more about how to get involved at home here in North America in terms of volunteering or helping to do public awareness in their communities, they can contact us directly at info@animalsasia.org, and email sent to that address will come to our office in San Francisco, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. And we are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We have a heavy web presence with a wonderful website at animalsasia.org, and we encourage everyone to visit it. One of the things that's there right now is our holiday gift shop, where we have some really fun merchandise, t-shirts and hats and scarves and bags and such that make fabulous holiday gifts. But we also have opportunities to give gifts to the bears and to dogs and cats this holiday season through our Gifts That Give, our Befriend a Bear and Sponsor a Bear opportunities, and gifts like donating pots of honey to the bears for the holidays or vet care for a year for a bear, which also these make wonderful holiday gifts for friends and loved ones, because when you make such a donation, you'll receive a card that you can give over the holidays, letting people know that you've made a donation in their name that will help the animals. So we'd love it if people took a moment to visit our holiday gift shop at animalsasia.org.
And the t-shirts are really cute.
They are. We've got two new designs this year, one by a wonderful skateboard company in California called Hendrick Boards. They created a really fantastic t-shirt for us that has a picture of one of our most iconic bears, Jasper, and then Stand Up for Moon Bears written in Chinese characters next to Jasper's picture. And it's a great t-shirt designed for men. And then we have a wonderful new women's t-shirt by the Hong Kong designer Mariko Jessie, which shows a beautiful moon bear sleeping on a crescent moon. So those are both available at the holiday gift shop as well.
So that's it for today's show. I just wanted to thank Morgan one more time for coming on and speaking with us today and telling us about Animals Asia and the bear sanctuaries, and specifically the eviction notice they've been served for the Vietnamese bear sanctuary, and for letting people know what they can do to help. So thanks a lot, Morgan.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
So before I sign off, I'm just going to remind everybody that I am doing a Q&A with registered dietitian Jack Norris very shortly. So send in your questions on vegan nutrition. Again, the Q&A is going to be everything you wanted to know about vegan nutrition but were afraid to ask. A question that I just received recently was essentially, does pulverizing food, like in a Vitamix, for example, does that actually do something bad to the food, like reduce its nutritional value? I have heard that before myself too. So yes, send in your questions, email us at animalvoices@gmail.com, or just post the questions right on our Facebook page. Send them in as soon as you can. Definitely before the 23rd of November, because we need to compile all the questions and send them off to Jack so he's ready for them. Animal Voices is produced from CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines and broadcast since 1996 on CIUT 89.5 FM, the University of Toronto's community radio station. You can also access our archive of over 370 shows online at animalvoices.ca. Please spread the word about us. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. Thank you very much to producer Daniel Angrenon and the whole Animal Voices team. If you've got questions, comments, ideas for shows, you can email us also, again, at animalvoices@gmail.com. Once again, I'm Erin O'Sullivan. Thanks for listening.